Imagine, just for a moment, something happens. Suddenly, unexpectedly, mm-hmm. and your whole world shifts. Mm-hmm. How you move, how you talk, even how you think. It's a moment that really makes you question everything about your own body, your mind.
It's a really profound experience, absolutely. And often, yeah, there's so much confusion surrounding it. People feel completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So today, we're going to do a deep dive into that world, the complex world of stroke. It affects so many lives.
Right. And our mission here is pretty clear. We want to pull out the really crucial, actionable stuff from a guide all about understanding stroke, recovery, and importantly, reducing risk.
Exactly. We want to give you, our listener, that clear knowledge.
Yeah, cut through the noise.
Precisely. Because we're looking at a resource that's designed to help people through that whole journey.
Yeah.
It's not just the medical facts, though they're important. It's also the emotional side, the practical day-to-day realities. So whether you're listening for yourself or maybe for a loved one or you just want to be informed, this should give you a shortcut to understanding what really counts.
Okay, great. So let's start right at the basics. What exactly is a stroke?
Well, at its core, it's pretty straightforward. A part of your brain suddenly loses its blood supply.
Okay.
And when brain cells don't get that blood, that oxygen, they start to get damaged or die. It's like, as you said, a power cut in a specific area of the brain's control center.
That makes sense. And I know there are different types.
That's right. Two main kinds. The most common one, maybe 85% of strokes, is called an ischemic stroke.
Ischemic.
Yeah. Think clot. A blood vessel in the brain gets blocked. Simple as that. Well, not simple in effect, but simple cause.
Right.
The other type is hemorrhagic stroke. That's often called a bleed.
Oh.
That's caused by bleeding either into the brain tissue itself or in the space around it. And knowing the type is critical because the immediate treatment is very different. Time is absolutely key.
And I guess this is where it gets really individual, right? Because no two strokes are the same.
Exactly. Every single stroke and every person's recovery journey is unique. It really boils down to two main things.
Which are?
Where in the brain the stroke happened, which functions that part controls, and how much damage was actually caused, the extent of it.
So it's location and severity.
Precisely. Mm. And in that immediate aftermath, when you get to hospital, well, it's usually a bit of a whirlwind.
I can imagine.
Brain scans, lots of tests, getting treatment started quickly. And it's totally normal to feel just wiped out, exhausted, maybe confused, shocked, upset. That feeling of confusion is very, very common with a stroke.
Yeah, the brain's been through trauma. And there's a really practical thing people might not know straight away about driving.
Oh, yes. That's crucial. Legally, you must not drive for one calendar month after having a stroke.
1 month minimum.
Minimum. It's just one of those immediate life changes that happens.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fine. So beyond that initial phase, the effects can look really different, can't they? Some physical, some less obvious.
Absolutely. Some people might have very few physical effects. Others might have several. We can start with the more visible changes people might notice.
Okay.
So often you see weakness or sometimes even paralysis down one side of the body. Hemiparesis or hemiplegia.
Right.
That might mean weak leg muscles, which makes balancing, walking, just getting around really difficult.
Mm.
Or it could be weakness in the arm and hand. Think about trying to write or use a knife and fork or even just buttoning a shirt. These daily tasks suddenly become huge challenges.
Things you don't even think about normally.
Exactly. Swallowing problems are also quite common. That's called dysphagia.
Dysphagia.
Yeah. Sometimes it means needing softer foods for a while, or in some cases, even temporary tube feeding to make sure you get enough nutrition safely.
Okay.
And vision can be hit, too. Some people become really sensitive to light, or they might have missing patches in their vision. Like a part of the picture is just gone, makes navigating really hard.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly disorienting. And what about communication? That seems like such a fundamental thing to be affected.
Oh, it's huge. And it's often one of the most frustrating parts for stroke survivors. It can be really isolating.
I bet. Why does it happen?
Well, there are a few reasons. If the stroke damages the language areas of the brain, it can cause something called aphasia.
Aphasia.
Yeah. And it's really important to understand aphasia doesn't mean someone is less intelligent. Not at all.
Right. That's key.
It's purely a problem with using language. So you might struggle to find the words you want to say or understand what others are saying. Reading, writing, even using numbers can be affected. Imagine knowing exactly what you want to communicate, but just not being able to get it out, or hearing words, but they sound like nonsense.
That must be incredibly frustrating.
Immensely. Then, separately, speech can become slurred. That's often due to weakness in the muscles of the face, lips, tongue. That's called dysarthria.
Okay, so that's the physical act of speaking.
Exactly. The muscles aren't working properly. And then on top of that, you often have problems with memory and concentration after a stroke, and those can make having a conversation difficult too.
So multiple layers potentially affecting communication.
Mm-hmm.
And that distinction between aphasia, the language processing, and dysarthria, the muscle control, is really important.
That's really important.
Now, you mentioned less obvious effects earlier. The hidden ones.
Yeah.
This sounds really complex because, well, other people can't see them.
That's right. And these hidden effects can be just as difficult, sometimes even more difficult to cope with than the physical ones. They can be really hard for loved ones to understand, too.
What kind of things are we talking about?
One of the biggest is fatigue. And we're not talking about just feeling a bit tired.
No.
This is a profound, overwhelming exhaustion that simply doesn't get better with rest. No. You can sleep for hours and still feel utterly drained. It's a direct result of the brain injury.
Wow. Okay. What else?
Feeling anxious or very low is extremely common. Depression can develop after a stroke. Changes in behavior, too. Someone might become more irritable than usual or more impulsive, maybe lose interest in things they used to love.
That must be hard for families.
It really can be. And another one is something called emotionalism or emotional lability.
Emotionalism.
Yeah. It means finding it really hard to control your emotions. You might burst into tears over something minor or find yourself laughing uncontrollably at something that isn't even that funny. And crucially, the outward emotion might not match how you actually feel inside.
So it's like the emotional volume knob is broken or unpredictable.
That's a good way to put it. Very unpredictable.
Gosh, these hidden effects really show how much a stroke impacts the whole person, don't they? It's this invisible weight.
It really is. So putting it all together, any stroke, doesn't matter if it's considered big or small, it can have a major impact on your life, no question.
There's hope, right?
Absolutely. There's a really strong message of hope. Many, many people make a good recovery. Now, it's true, not everyone gets back to exactly how they were before.
Hi.
But with the right support, the right therapy, it is definitely possible to rebuild your life and find a new normal.
And that rebuilding process, that's where the brain itself comes in, isn't it? This amazing ability it has, neuroplasticity.
Yes. Neuroplasticity. It's just fascinating. Your brain has this incredible capacity to actually rewire itself after injury.
Rewire. How does that work?
It creates new connections. Healthy areas of the brain can learn to take over functions that were managed by the damaged area. It finds new pathways, new routes to get the job done. This process is the foundation of recovery.
So recovery isn't just about healing. It's about reorganizing, adapting.
Exactly. It's an active, dynamic process within the brain. It's quite amazing.
It really is. And therapy, rehabilitation, that's all designed to encourage that rewiring process.
That's precisely the goal. Rehab therapy helps to stimulate and guide that neuroplasticity.
Okay.
So with expert support from therapists, plus a lot of hard work and practice from the individual, it is often possible to relearn skills. Skills like walking, talking, using your affected arm or hand.
How does that therapy process usually start?
It typically begins quite soon after the stroke, often while you're still in the hospital. A therapist, maybe a physio or an OT or speech therapist, will assess your specific situation, see what the challenges are.
Right.
Then, really importantly, they work with you to set personal goals. What do you want to be able to do again?
Makes sense. Collaborative.
Very. Then they create an individual plan. This will have specific activities, exercises, advice tailored to those goals. So if you have muscle weakness, therapy is going to focus on getting you moving safely, improving balance, building strength.
Okay.
If communication is the issue, they'll work on strategies to improve speaking or understanding. If using your hands for daily tasks is hard, they might teach you new ways to do things like dressing or cooking, maybe suggest helpful equipment.
So it starts with the professionals, but it sounds like the work has to continue beyond the therapy sessions.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely crucial. Rehab starts with the pros, but it really continues at home every day. Practicing those exercises and activities, maybe on your own, maybe with help from family or friends, that repetition is what really helps build those new brain connections.
It's a long-term commitment.
It really is. And that brings us to a really important piece of advice for anyone going through this or supporting someone who is. Give it time.
Patience is key.
Huge. Don't panic if progress feels slow sometimes or if things don't improve immediately. Yes, the biggest leaps often happen in the first few months.
Right.
But recovery absolutely can and often does continue for years. It's not a short sprint for most people. And some things, like maybe bladder control issues or swallowing, speaking, walking, they can actually improve quite quickly in the early days or weeks. Okay. But the longer journey needs that persistence.
Good to know. And you mentioned therapists. It sounds like there's a whole team involved, a kind of dream team for recovery.
Huh. Yeah, you could call it that. It's definitely a team effort. Several key professionals play really vital roles.
Okay, who's on the team?
Well, you'll likely work with a physiotherapist. They focus on your physical recovery, strength, movement, mobility, balance, stamina, getting you moving again safely.
Right. The movement expert.
Then there's the occupational therapist, or OT. Their focus is on helping you regain independence in everyday life.
Practical skills.
Exactly. Relearning skills for dressing, cooking, bathing, whatever you need. They might advise on adaptations for your home or special equipment to make tasks easier.
Super important.
Definitely. Then the speech and language therapist, the SLT, they work on improving speech, understanding language, reading, writing, all those communication aspects we talked about.
Aphasia, dysarthria.
Yes. And they also treat swallowing and eating difficulties that dysphagia.
Ah, okay. They cover swallowing too.
They do. Working closely sometimes with a dietitian. The dietitian helps make sure you can eat and drink safely if you have swallowing problems. And they also give broader advice on healthy eating for recovery and general health.
Good nutrition is vital.
Crucial. And finally, you might work with a psychologist. They can help with cognitive difficulties, problems with memory, thinking, concentration, and also provide support for the emotional challenges like anxiety, low mood, or depression.
Wow, that's a comprehensive team, covering all the bases, really.
Yeah.
Physical, practical, communication, emotional.
That's the goal, holistic support.
Which leads nicely to another key tip, I think. Ask questions.
Yes, absolutely. Don't be afraid to ask. All these people, the doctors, nurses, therapists, they are there to help you understand what's happened, what the plan is, what it all means for you personally.
Your participation matters.
It really does. Being informed helps you engage in your own recovery.
Okay, so looking beyond the immediate recovery phase, reducing the risk of another stroke becomes really important, right?
Hugely important. It requires, yeah, vigilance and taking proactive steps.
And part of that is knowing the warning signs, not just for you, but for others, too. You mentioned the FAST test earlier.
Yes, FAST is the key one to remember. It's simple and effective for spotting most strokes quickly.
Let's recap it. F is for
face. Has their face fallen on one side? Can they smile evenly?
Aye.
Arms. Ask the person to raise both arms. Does one arm drift downwards? Can they keep them both up?
Yes.
Speech problems. Is their speech slurred or strange? Can they understand what you're saying? Can they speak clearly?
10.
Time. Time to call 999 or your local emergency number immediately if you see any single one of those signs. Face, arms, or speech. Don't wait.
Every second counts.
Literally. Saving brain tissue.
And while FAST is great for the main signs, are there others people should be aware of?
Yes, definitely. It doesn't cover everything. Other signs to look out for include sudden weakness or numbness. Again, usually on one side could be leg, hand, foot.
Okay.
Sudden difficulty finding words or speaking in clear sentences, even if the face and arms seem okay. Sudden blurred vision or loss of sight in one eye or both.
Right.
Sudden memory loss or confusion, sudden dizziness or a fall that's unexplained, or a sudden really severe headache, often described as like nothing they've ever felt before.
The worst headache of your life.
Yeah, that's the phrase people often use. If you see any of those signs, again, call 999 straight away. Stroke can happen to anyone, any age. It's not just an older person's condition.
It's such an important reminder. Anyone, any age. Okay, so after a stroke, people get checked for underlying conditions that might have contributed.
Yes. Thorough checks are standard. We look for the major risk factors.
Like what?
Top of the list is usually high blood pressure, hypertension.
Okay.
Also, atrial fibrillation, often called AFib, that's a type of irregular heartbeat.
Why is that a risk?
Because with AFib, blood can pool in the heart chambers, making clots more likely to form. If a clot breaks off, it can travel to the brain and cause a stroke. It's a major risk factor.
Got it. What else?
The diabetes is another significant risk factor, as is high cholesterol.
Right. And managing these is key to prevention.
Absolutely. One of the very best things you can do to reduce your risk of another stroke is to follow the treatment plan for any of these conditions you might have, taking your medications as prescribed.
Makes sense.
And alongside medication, you'll almost certainly get advice on lifestyle changes. Things like being more physically active, eating a healthier diet, losing weight if necessary, stopping smoking, cutting down on alcohol, all those things help lower your overall risks.
So it's a combination of medical treatment and lifestyle adjustment.
Exactly. Both are really important.
Now, moving beyond the physical and the risk factors, the emotional journey continues long after leaving hospital, doesn't it? People can feel quite isolated.
Yes, that's very common. Many stroke survivors say they feel isolated, especially at first. It can be hard to explain to others what you're feeling, what you're going through, the shock of it all. It really does change your life. There can be a sense of grief involved, too.
Yeah, for the life you had before.
Precisely. But the key message here is, you are not alone.
Important.
When you leave hospital, you should get support from community stroke teams, nurses, therapists continuing your care. If you feel you need more help or things change, your GP is a crucial contact point. And there are dedicated helplines, like the stroke associations.
And talking about it helps.
Immensely. Sharing how you feel with family and friends can really help them understand. It bridges that gap.
And connecting with others who've been through it. Peer support.
Oh, that can be incredibly powerful. Many people find it so helpful to meet other stroke survivors, people who just get it.
Yeah.
There are online forums like My Stroke Guide and also local stroke groups or clubs across the country. These provide a community, a space to share tips, experiences, challenges, successes. It reduces that feeling of isolation.
That sounds invaluable. So just to recap some resources, the Stroke Association's helpline.
Yes, great resource. They offer support for anyone affected by stroke, the survivor, family, friends, carers, anyone.
And their website.
Stroke.org.uk, loads of detailed information there. And My Stroke Guide, which is mystrokeguide.com, gives you that 24/7 access to reliable info, advice, and the online community forum.
Great. And other practical help exists too, right? Beyond stroke-specific charities.
Definitely. Remember, your GP, specialist nurse, or pharmacist can give individual advice on risk reduction. Your GP can help with ongoing emotional or physical issues.
Okay.
Your local council's adult social services can provide information about accommodation, care support, adaptations, and for things like money worries, legal questions, employment issues, Citizens Advice offers free, confidential help.
Good to know.
And one other thing, sometimes there are opportunities to take part in research studies. This helps researchers learn more and improve stroke care for the future, something people might consider.
Right. Contributing to future progress.
Ah.
Okay. So today we've covered a lot of ground. We've taken a deep dive into what happens during a stroke, the effects both seen and unseen. We've explored that amazing recovery journey powered by neuroplasticity.
That incredible brain rewiring.
Yeah. And looked at the vital steps for reducing risk and, crucially, finding support in community afterwards. We've touched on the science, the human side, the practical help available.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? Especially about that neuroplasticity, which actually raises an interesting question for you, the listener, to ponder.
Okay.
Considering the brain's ability to rewire itself, and we know consistent rehab has a big impact, what sustained everyday practices things beyond formal therapy sessions? What do you think could really contribute most to ongoing recovery and quality of life for stroke survivors? Maybe even years down the line. How can we keep supporting that neuroplasticity in our daily routines?
That's a great question. What little things add up over time? Food for thought. We've definitely walked through a complex topic today, and we really hope you found these insights informative, maybe even empowering.
Hope so.
Just remember, this has been general information based on a comprehensive guide. If you have specific worries or questions about your own health or someone else's, please always talk to a health professional, your GP, pharmacist, or specialist team. They can give you advice tailored to you.
Absolutely essential.
Your journey to being well-informed really does matter.